Hello. Thank you for making great choices and listening to Choices. I am your host, Christine Choi. I'm sure you're aware of what's been going on in the last couple of weeks with Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford. I'm also sure that you're aware of the Me Too movement and the amount of women coming forward and speaking about sexual assault and their experiences with it. I want to share with you stories of some amazing, brave women who shared their stories with me in this three-part series. There were many stories that were hard to hear, so I first and foremost want to thank each and every one of these women from the bottom of my heart for sharing their stories with me and you. From this, I want women who went through sexual abuse to know that they are not alone. And that no story is a small story. No abuse is small abuse. That we need to continue speaking up in order to change the narrative of sexual assault. I also don't want the good men out there to think of this as an attack on men as a group. We thank you and we applaud you for being good, respectful men. But rather, please know that the change comes from talking about it. With our families, with our friends, our children, and really anybody and everybody. And for those of you who may feel guilty that you may have committed these assaults or abuses as a teen or whatever age, I hope that you hear the pain you've caused, and I truly hope that you've changed or will change. I truly hope that you've learned that this is not okay. And make a promise to yourself that you will do everything in your power to stop this from continuing. I might be giving you too much credit, and I might have too much faith in humanity, but I think I would still much rather have faith than not. Some of these stories were given to me in a written form, so some of the stories in my voice are not personal stories of mine, while some are. I want to make sure to tell you that there are some disturbing stories and adult language in these episodes, so if you can't listen to detailed stories of sexual assault, I would skip the Me Too Our Story series as a whole.
I didn't want it. I said no multiple times, multiple ways. I put myself in a bad position, absolutely. But I didn't ask to be raped, right?
Yeah, that was one of the brave women who shared their stories with us in this episode. I just wanted to play that clip in the beginning because what was most frustrating and sad about these stories was that almost every woman who shared their story had that exact moment of, I did not want it. I said no. I didn't ask for it, right? That last bit of self-doubt, that tiny little speckle of, was it my fault? Did I provoke them somehow? Let me introduce you these courageous women in my life. Rather I'd known them for 15 plus years, or I've just met them through the collection of these stories, they are my sisters. We stand together. Here are their stories.
I lived in a fairly large apartment complex. This was a gated community that at the time I felt safe in because not only was I paying for the association in amenities, but I was paying for a security guard that was on site 24/7, the gates that kept us enclosed in the community. So I always felt like I was safe and could walk my dog super early in the morning, late in the evening, and not feel like I needed someone with me. And on this particular day, I was walking my dog, and it was one of those hot San Jose summer days, triple digits for sure. So we were doing our normal route and had stopped on a grass field that we always stop on, and we're hanging out, let him off leash. I had noticed this gentleman was sitting on his patio and looked like he was sunbathing, which I didn't question because it was so hot. But the closer I got, I noticed he wasn't wearing a bathing suit bottom. He was wearing boxers. So definitely apparel that, you know, you would not see out and about. I have horrible vision, so I couldn't really tell what he was doing, but I did notice he stood up from his chair that he was sunbathing on and was looking directly at me. I'm not too sure how long he was actually sitting out there while I was on that grass field with my dog, but I know it was long enough for him to recognize me and to be fixated on me, because by the time I got parallel to him on the sidewalk in front of his patio, I had noticed in the boxers that he was wearing that there was a hole, and out of the boxer hole, he had a fully erect penis and was masturbating, staring square in my eye.
I started a new job where I knew people, so I naturally felt safe. It was a restaurant, and although it was formal, the staff would joke around and were very friendly with each other. I observed everyone before I really made solid connections and just tried to do my job and go home. There was a manager who had always taken his flirtatious nature too far. But I let it go, thinking it was normal. Every day his comments progressed. It began with compliments, then suggestions of seeing him outside of work. I was bothered. And I told my boyfriend, but I insisted I stay quiet about it. One day, my family came to the restaurant for lunch, including my grandma, and my grandma's opinion meant everything to me. This manager came over, said hello to the family, then invited me out for drinks in front of them. He also hugged me over my shoulders, putting his hands closely to my neck. This struck a chord with everyone at the table, particularly my grandma. She was irate. I assured her I'd take care of it and talk to my other boss the following day. But at that point, stupidly, I still had no intention of doing so. I didn't want to rock the boat. The next day came, and it got worse. I had just walked in and was looking at the reservations on the tablet at the host stand. The manager came up behind me and whispered in my ear, "You would look better if I was bending you over." I was nauseated.
I was the perfect little girl. Well, as perfect as I could be at the tender age of 5. Always obey what my parents and my grandparents told me to do, unlike my sister, who was the complete wild child. It's a big joke in our family that whenever we go out in public, my sister would have a little leash on her wrist, and I'd get to be let free because I would just stand near my grandma and not run away. This would explain why I actually always listened to my older cousins as well. I was sexually abused as a little girl between the ages of 5 and 7. It was an older male cousin, and he would wait for me in his room, and once I got into his room, he would touch me inappropriately. And it's the funny little details that you remember. I cannot tell you how many times it happened, or the time of year, the dates, or anything like that. But what I can tell you is I remember staring at the top of his bulky TV on the dresser, or despising the Buffalo Bills blanket he had on his bed.
I was 18 years old. We were at a friend's birthday party. We had a great time. We were all drunk. A friend from high school and I were outside, in the front of the house, not the backyard like most of our friends. Maybe we had gone out to the front to smoke weed since our friend's parents were in the backyard. We were definitely flirting, and we have had been physical in the past. But it had been some time since any of that had happened. But flirting can still be fun. There weren't other people with us, but there were other people outside not too far away. We were both drunk. He asked me to give him a blowjob. I said no way. I should have walked away right then. But I liked flirting with him, and I liked the attention he gave me. He kept asking me to give him a blowjob, and he took his dick out and had me touch it. I kept saying no, but I don't know why my words and my action didn't match up. Looking back, I'm guessing it was the fear of not being liked, the fear of being called a tease, and I'm sure alcohol didn't help. He kept telling me to kiss it. He pushed my body down to the level of his dick. I gave him head that night, on the street, in front of my friend's house where she was celebrating her birthday, where some of our friends actually saw this happening.
The first time that it really occurred at a time when I was really fully aware of the fact that I was being violated, I was about 18 years old. And I had gone to the house of a friend who I'd actually previously had a sexual relationship with. We had never been exclusive or anything like that, but we had had a sexual relationship, but we weren't currently. And I was actually dating somebody else exclusively. This guy knew that, seemed to be okay with it, but he invited me to come over after work one night and watch a movie. And we were friends. We worked together. We were buddies. I thought, okay, fine, great, not a big deal. And it wasn't too long into that movie that I realized that his intent wasn't actually to watch a movie, that he wanted me there for other reasons. Before I even really knew what was happening, I was wedged in the couch between the back and the seat. I'm just under 5 feet tall, and he's right around 6 feet tall, and definitely overpowered me. I was thinking to myself, you just need to scream out. His older brother was home. His parents weren't. But I knew that there was help upstairs. And I knew that if I screamed, his brother would come down and save me. And so I'm thinking all of these things. And I went to open my mouth, and literally nothing would even come out. And I remember just laying there feeling so helpless and paralyzed and incapable of doing anything for myself. That was the first time that I'd ever felt so utterly powerless to defend myself. And he ended up actually not following through at that moment. I don't even know exactly why he didn't. I don't know if he just kind of became aware of what was going on, or if he was aware that his brother was right upstairs. I don't know what happened. But for whatever reason, he didn't actually follow through and rape me that day. Cut to a few weeks later. And we were at a party together. It was after work again one night. And we were at a poker party with a bunch of our coworkers and some friends. And of course, I was drinking. And he asked me if I would walk him home. And it wasn't too far away, but it was kind of back through some, you know, a gravel road through the forest. You know, nothing about that said that's a good idea, but I was drunk and it seemed like a grand idea. And as we were walking along, we came to a little clearing off onto the side of the road, and he pulled me into this clearing and immediately started groping at me and kissing on me and all that stuff. And I continued to say no and try to push him off. But again, he was bigger and stronger, and I was unable to do anything about it. And all of a sudden, I found myself in exactly the same predicament, except for now I was in the forest and I was alone, and he didn't stop. Less than a year later, I was actually out on a mission trip. I was with a Bible school. I had made some massive changes to my life. I was no longer drinking. I was no longer partying. I was no longer out having sex. So I was out on a mission trip, and we're in this little tiny town in Western Australia. And I'm walking along the street, and there's like this festival going on in the little village. And here I am, 5 foot, blonde haired, blue eyed, pale skinned me. And sure enough, this native came up to me, reeking of alcohol. And he grabbed me and he started kissing me and groping me in the middle of the street. And I panicked. And in that panic, I froze all over again.
As I listened to these women's stories, I couldn't help but to just hurt with them. I felt the pain that I felt when I went through what I went through, just rushing back. These were their initial thoughts after it happened.
It was a range of emotions. It was angry. It was sad. It was disgusted. It was angry. I say angry again because, I don't know, 10 minutes prior to me walking on that grass field, I had noticed children playing on a playground not too far away. And I just thought about that child riding their bicycle right by his patio.
I was upset. I did everything not to cry. I held it together until the end of my shift, then I let it go. I cried out of disgust. And I replayed how I acted toward him previously. Had I suggested I wanted that?
And I remember thinking that if I don't go in there, he'd be mad at me and then I'd get in trouble. I remember feeling scared and at fault, like I had somehow caused this to happen.
I actually had completely blocked this out of my memory. I'm feeling all the shame all over again as I type this.
And I remember just feeling like, why am I so stupid? You know, I was at this party. I was drunk. I put myself in this vulnerable position. And then not only that, but I trusted him again. Even though weeks prior too, he had attempted to do the same thing, but I had trusted him. And I felt so stupid for that. And I kept thinking, I mean, this can't really be happening, right? Maybe I'm just making it all up in my mind. Maybe I'm blowing things out of proportion. Maybe I really did kind of insinuate that I wanted to have sex with him.
It was just so upsetting to hear how common it is for women to blame themselves or feel shame for something that was done to them. I asked them if they told someone, and I also asked them why or why not.
I ran to my apartment and told my boyfriend at the time, please come out here. This guy is masturbating. And he chuckled and couldn't believe what I said. So not only did I feel offended by a stranger, but I was offended by my partner. We had called 911 and the sheriff came. And when I was explaining the story to the officers, they found it humorous, maybe because of how I described it. I don't know. But it seemed like it was no big deal. Like, oh, okay, well, identify him and we'll be on our way. Was justice served? Fine. State took him away in handcuffs, probably slapped him with a citation. I was concerned for myself. I was concerned for the children. I was concerned for any other woman that could have seen this. Once I went to report it to the office, the leasing office on site, they had told me that they had received complaints that the gentleman, I don't even know how to describe him, the guy, had received complaints before for watching pornography with his blinds open.
I told my boyfriend that night. He was outraged and told me that if I wasn't going to say anything, he was. I kept it to myself for a few more weeks. I eventually went to my boss and asked him for it to be anonymous and asked if he would just speak to him about it. My boss has a wife, kids, and morals. He knew he couldn't let that slide. He was fired a few days later. I kept wanting to keep it to myself for fear of not being cool. In retrospect, that sounds crazy. I just wanted it to go away. I wanted to keep the peace. And I was willing to go against my morals and what I knew was wrong in order to do so. This was nearly 8 years ago, and my not doing anything for so long still haunts me.
It was someone I knew, and it was someone I was afraid of. It was also something I kept buried inside for a very long time. I was afraid of telling anyone as a child because I knew it was wrong. I knew what was happening was bad, but I didn't know on whose end. I was the one who would walk into his room. So wasn't it my fault? Wasn't I the guilty party? When I finally did tell people, it was in my freshman year of college, and it was something I was embarrassed about. I had let it happen to me, and that was embarrassing. Every single person I told had a different reaction. Some it didn't even seem to affect, even though maybe inside it did. Others were mortified and disgusted, Some were angry. But even then, one of the reactions that I got from a few people, which has left me speechless, was the response, well, he was a young boy, and you know, boys will be boys.
After this happened, I acted as nothing happened. I remained friends with him, and it's not like we saw each other much anyway. And to be honest, I don't think I thought of it as sexual assault at the time. I didn't tell anyone about this, ever. Again, some of our friends saw this happening, and I assumed it was being talked about. No one asked me about it, no one talked to me about it, and I felt so much shame.
A day or two later, we were at work together, and I saw him, and I kind of just tried to make light of it, and I said, hey, so wow, what happened the other night, huh? And he brushed me off and he's like, I don't know, what are you talking about? And I said, you know, like when I was walking you home, like, what happened? And he just looks at me and he goes, nothing happened. And I was like, really? Because I thought something happened between you and I. And he's like, nope, nothing happened. And he played it off so nonchalant. I thought, son of a bitch. Like, he's never gonna own up to this. And there's not a damn thing I can do about it. Because I'm an 18-year-old girl who is underage, who is drinking, who is at a party, who set herself up to be taken advantage of. So if I were to ever take this to the police, like, what are they going to do? You know, nobody's going to take me seriously. And so I felt so paralyzed and I felt so helpless.
The common thread here felt like it was clear that these women felt that they weren't heard when they told someone. Or didn't tell someone because they felt that they wouldn't be heard, or fear not being accepted. We need to make a safe environment for women and girls to come out and share their stories. We cannot continue the same cycle of women and their stories being silenced out of shame, out of fear. We must teach the next generation that you must speak up. We must teach them by showing them that we're not afraid. We are not ashamed, that we know our words are worth speaking and that they are worth hearing. We need to keep the conversation going. We need to keep talking about it so it's not taboo. We need to keep the rallies and the marches going, even if we're not seeing a noticeable impact on behaviors or on our government. If for nothing more than just to remind ourselves and our sisters that it is not okay and we will not put up with it. There are weight to our words and our truths.
That is why the women's empowerment movement is so important. I share my story for every girl that has ever been told boys will be boys. We are doing a disservice to the next generations by excusing this type of behavior. I fight for my niece and all young girls growing up. The Me Too movement has blown my mind, and I'm so proud of the many women for standing up and sharing their stories. As this election day is approaching, we have a local man in upstate New York running for county legislator. On his public Facebook page, he has actually ridiculed Dr. Ford for coming forward and sharing her story. He will not be my county legislator. My hope for the future is that women show up at the polls and let the politicians know that we will not tolerate our stories being taken lightly. We will not tolerate being shamed. We will not tolerate being ridiculed. We, as women, can change the way women are treated only by shedding a light on the stories that have been silenced.
I think it's so important for us to educate young women that they never have to do anything they don't want to do. I was lucky in the sense that I clearly had a choice to get out of that situation. Not all women are that lucky. I think the most important thing about the Me Too movement is to educate young women to speak up, not to allow someone else to take control of a situation, to stand up, know what is right and what is wrong. And speak against what is wrong. Don't fear the truth. Never fear the truth.
You know, it's, It's weird. I'm sitting here in my recording studio and I'm sharing this story with an empty room. And honestly, I mean, I've thought about all of this a lot over the years. I've talked about it a lot. But I've never just sat down and recounted all of it. Just one thing after another. And there's so much more that's not even being said. And the simple fact is, I've had it pretty good. You know, I've never been beaten up. I've never been left unconscious for dead. But the simple fact is I'm not alone. How many other women are there that are just like me? I'm really glad that women are beginning to stand up and say, hey, this is the face of a victim. This is the face of abuse. This is what it looks like to be somebody who has been victimized over and over again. I'm proud of the women that are standing up because it does take courage. It's really, really hard to face those demons because you're plagued with such self-doubt. Because maybe it was my fault. What did I do to provoke this? Maybe I send out some kind of aura or vibe that draws these kinds of creeps into my life. I don't know. So you really start to doubt yourself and you feel so isolated and alone, even though you know that the statistics say that 1 in 4 women have been sexually assaulted in their life. You know those statistics. Man, you know you're not alone. But you feel like you're alone because nobody's talking about it. And now women are talking about it. And I'm glad for that.
Once again, I want to thank these amazing ladies for sharing their stories. It's not easy reliving some of the worst moments of your life. I am so, so grateful for their strength and their desire to help in making a change. Thank you for listening to Me Too, Our Stories, Part 1. We will be back with more amazing women and their stories next week for Part 2. Don't forget to connect with us on social media, Choice S Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and send in your feedback and ask Choi questions to choicespodcast@gmail.com. All right, talk to you next week. Okay, thanks, bye.